Julian's, it is, I don't know if it's an honor, but it's definitely a pleasure to have you on this podcast.
Likewise.
Because, you know, first of all, you're very well known. But secondly, I think I first realized the magnitude of your presence when the recently announced NetBank transaction was done. And you were the first one. I think by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you already had that information in hand. And I realized the power of circulating information and the power of the work that you do, because everyone trusted the source of your information. And obviously, yes, it was accurate. So that's how I really was like, Julian's has to come on this podcast. And they tell us how he got to the position that he got to. So yes, first of all, tell us a bit about yourself.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jerry. I'm a big fan of your content.
Thank you.
And I truly, truly appreciate what players like yourselves are doing on the alternative media space, because we play in the mainstream.
Yeah.
But alternative is increasingly showing that we can democratize the space of content creation, which is fantastic. A little bit about myself. I'm an economist by training.
Okay. So is my dad. So he'll be very happy to hear that.
Mm-hmm. And a journalist by passion.
Okay.
So when I did my undergrad starting 09 till 2013, economics, then did my postgrad and finished around 2020, COVID time. That time I was working in transaction advisory.
Okay.
So I was on the sell side,
okay,
structuring deals, looking for investors, packaging these companies. Sometimes companies would come to you and their books are in total disarray.
Yes.
So you really have to build it up. And in 2018, when we closed the deal, I decided it was time to jump ship.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got a young family. You really don't have a life, as you would know. And you must choose your trade-offs. Mm-hmm. You really must choose your trade-offs. And I decided it's time to bolt out.
But how did you know that journalism was going to be the next step?
Good question. So when I was doing my undergrad fourth year, mm-hmm, by sheer chance, I got an internship at Easy FM.
Okay.
What is today called Nation FM.
Okay.
And so the way I would host the news and then run to class. Host the news, run to class. And I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I really loved it. And the feedback was good.
But because you have the voice for it, right?
Thank you very much. So even as I went into transaction advisory, it remained at the back of my mind that this is something that I could potentially do.
Okay.
So that is part number one. Mm-hmm. Part number two is that when I was in high school, our principal had a trip to the US and he came back with a stash of books. And I remember him telling us, I've come with Bill Clinton's My Life. Mm-hmm. You guys should read it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go to the library, I find another book he has brought. And the book is titled The Smartest Guys in the Room. The Amazing Rise and Calamitous Fall of Enron.
Mm-hmm.
And the story of Enron's implosion had such an imprint on me. And the fact that it was broken by a journalist,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I kept asking myself, how did this person just do all this research and break this news and bring down such a corporate titan, literally?
Mm-hmm.
And that thing stuck to me to date. I keep referring to that book. So those two, I would say that's how I got my way into this podcast.
So once you left the transaction advisory space, who did you join then?
Directly? Nation Media.
Nation Media.
Nation Media. Okay. At the time, Nation Media happened to be scouting around to try and rebuild its talent base. So someone reached out and they were like, there's an opening and come, let's see, let's do a screen test and let's do all these tests. I go for the screen test and I have an offer. Trust me, it's nothing compared to what transaction advisory gives you by way of compensation. But I figured
Maybe not at the start.
Well, you could put it that way.
Yeah.
But I figured there's more to this than money.
Yeah.
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 There's the impact. There's the influence. There's the fact that you're building some brand equity, which on the other side, you wouldn't be able to build.
Yeah. I mean, definitely the brand equity is one of the things that you have gotten 100% right.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've noticed from your program is, number one, you know the subject matter very well and you understand it and you can translate it into simple terms for people who don't necessarily have a financial training. So that's excellent. And then also as a person, I think people are you're warm and charming and people relate to you, which is the things that people need in order to progress their journalism career. What has been one of the pivotal moments in your career that you thought, here, I've made it?
Oof. So I remember this day very well. So COVID has struck March 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And at the start, we are all trying to figure it out. And I remember this day, a former president Uhuru Kenyatta calls us to State House. So he calls for a briefing. And of course, we all take it live. And he's announcing the COVID relief measures. And so when the presser is done, I remember my editor, my managing editor, Emmanuel Juma, asks, now, how do we explain this to Kenyans? Mm-hmm. Because there was pay, there was VAT, there was pending bills.
The relief, right?
There was, yes, there was VAT refunds. Mm-hmm. And I told Emmanuel Juma, it's very simple. And I broke it down for him. Mm-hmm. Emmanuel Juma told me, what you've just said.
Is exactly
go
how,
to studio
yeah,
mm-hmm. and say exactly that.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I was thrown into studio and did an explainer of this is what is changing. VAT is coming down from this to this. This is what VAT is. Pay is changing by this much. These are the bands which are being affected. The feedback was enormous. And if you ask me, in my broadcast career, that was the inflection point.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Because from there, it was clearly defined that in public finance, we certainly have a resource that we can deploy to help us help the public make sense of what's happening.
And so how did you start? When did Business Redefined start? At that time? Later?
Yes. Yeah. It actually started in May of 2020.
Okay,
and Business Redefined is a very interesting story because I had been pitching a business show ever since I joined Nation and it was never getting approval. Mm-hmm. So when COVID happened, when COVID struck, the first action that was taken by corporates was to slash advertising because everyone went into capital preservation.
Correct.
So a number of programs were withdrawn from air. And then I remember being told, you've always been pitching for something. Mm-hmm. Now we have space. So Tuesday, 7:30, I think it used to be House Helps or something as a program.
See, House Helps.
Yes. And I was told now, here's the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Tuesday, 7:30 to 8, do your business show. Let's see how it goes. Mm-hmm. And it's been a good run.
I mean, I think it
has been
that's being modest. I think it's been a very good run,
yeah.
Especially because people are very interested to understand how the market is moving, what changes are being made. And I think there's a younger population who really know that this is pivotal to, the economy.
Yeah.
How do you get your guests? How do they volunteer to come or how do you get pitched to them?
So it's varied. Mm. For example, we are now getting into the banking sector earning cycle.
Yeah.
There'll be a lot of appetite for breaking down the earnings, the balance sheet, the cash flow statement, and helping guys just understand.
Yeah.
And especially given what is happening in the banking sector right now with all the consolidation and M&A activity. So March is typically defined by banking
that.
Sector earnings. Mm-hmm. Now, after March, we get into the budget cycle. Because as you know, by law, by April, end of close of April, we should have seen finance bill. Mm-hmm. So between April and June, the Business Redefined will be heavily public finance centric, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. taxation, appropriations, amendment bills, and all that that comes with it. So there's that cyclicality in terms of what defines your coverage.
Yeah.
Then we have, when we get into now the Q3, we have a bit of banking earnings, but not as loud as we have in March. When we get to, for example, I skipped something, around April, we'll be more on the global environment because mm-hmm. we have the IMF World Bank spring meetings, and a lot of sovereign debt discussion. So that is how the content is typically shaped. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess there are various questions that can come out of that. Number one, where do you think Kenya is positioned today vis-a-vis 2019 when COVID was starting?
If you look at Kenya today, the sentiment, and quite rightly so, is that on the one hand, we seem to be straddling a challenge here. The macros tell one story. Mm-hmm. The micros don't reflect that.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. Kenyans are saying...
Can you explain that a bit for those people who are not
absolutely.
In finance?
You're telling us inflation is well anchored.
Okay.
You're telling us interest rates are coming down. The shilling is stable. GDP growth is getting back to 5%. All these numbers look good.
And those are the macros.
Those are the macros.
Yeah.
But the ordinary Kenyan in their household, their disposable income is not reflecting that. Mm-hmm. They're still living within a very tight budget constraint environment. So that is where we are. And we need to think about our policy toolbox in terms of how we address this. There are a couple of suggestions I have personally tabled to the National Treasury. One was telling them, we need to have a conversation about pay-as-you-earn. Mm-hmm. Because as the pay-as-you-earn bands are structured currently, there is a problem. So I'm delighted to hear there's a conversation ongoing currently.
Yes, wasn't there an announcement on a reduction?
So we haven't seen the proposal yet. And you know, people can say things in podiums. And then when you look at the bill, it's something different. So we're waiting to see the bill. Mm-hmm. But it's a welcome move. it's a welcome move because we need to address our pay problem. And it was even captured in the medium-term revenue strategy. The second one was, if you have state arrears, what we like to call pending bills, yes, to the hundreds of billions, mm-hmm, and for years, you have locked cash flows that business would otherwise be using to advance their growth, mm-hmm, and that impacts people. So that is something which we need to think about again. So that is where we are vis-a-vis 2019, rather. If you look at the data from the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics, Kenya has had 6 straight years of contracting real wages, mm-hmm, telling you if you adjust your income for inflation, 6 years ago, you are a lot better than you are right now. And that is why the macros might be good. But Kenyans will tell you, mm-hmm, we don't resonate with that.
So what is the solution in the interim now?
So the first one is that pay conversation. Yeah. We must have it. Mm-hmm. The second one is, how far are we going with this issue of pending bills and the state arrears?
Mm. But those pending bills, I guess there's a limited amount that we can do because they're already, you know, catered for.
So they have started with the road sector. Mm-hmm. And we are hoping that we will see that momentum continuing into the next financial year, which is 2026-27, because there was a conversation around going to market to securitize them, which essentially means you float a bond and, yeah, then you're able to use the proceeds to, yeah, pay the contractors and what have you. Let's deal with it. Mm-hmm. And let's ensure that businesses have their cash flow sorted. The other one is we keep on making policy adjustments, which then we stifle. Mm-hmm. Good case in point. Finance Act 2025 had an amendment around Section 47 on the offsets. Mm-hmm. Essentially telling you, if you have an overpayment in one tax head, you'll be able to offset it,
mm-hmm, in another,
in your future tax, mm-hmm, liabilities. Mm-hmm. Then Treasury comes and says it is hitting our revenue realization. But of course,
that was the point.
But it raises an even more fundamental question. Mm-hmm. How are overpayments recognized in the exchequer books? It should never be as revenue. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a liability on their part.
Because it is not something that you're expecting to retain.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it tells you, one, from a revenue accounting standpoint, we need to have a national conversation.
Okay.
And two, let's just mean, when we have a proposal and it's passed, let's actually execute it.
I mean, those are such important points. And you're a journalist.
Yes.
And you have a lot of education to give to us and also to the government.
Yeah.
How do you straddle that? Are you looking to be a politician? Are you entering the political
arena? Not at all. Actually, I have no political interest. Mm-hmm. I come from the point of view that, you know, before Finance Act 23, I keep telling guys, I used to do breakdowns on X and no one really took notice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The flipping point was Finance Act 2023, because that Finance Act really raided our pay slips. Mm, mm. Affordable housing levy came, mm-hmm, the two top new tax rates, pay 32.5 and 35, came. And so when I did my usual explain and I go for our morning briefing, and when I come back, I could not keep up with the notifications. Mm, mm. Because out here, there's a hunger for information, credible information, mm, and guidance on, make this make sense. What does it mean,
yeah,
for me?
Yes, exactly.
And that is purely what this is all about.
Yeah.
So for me, as long as I keep seeing we have an enlightened citizenry out here, I get so content. I remember getting into a taxi and this driver is asking me about VAT. I was so delighted. Mm-hmm. I'm like, my goodness, we are at this point where a driver just meets you and they're asking you about VAT amendments. It was such a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. How many people, I mean, vis-a-vis, first of all, there's a conversation to be had about young people,
yeah,
who may not even be in formal employment scenarios where they have to make all of those deductions,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah.
Then there are people who are like us, working every day and making all the deductions that we have to because, you know, the government requests that of us. Then there are people who are independent contractors, taxi drivers, etc.
Yes.
How do we straddle the fact that the younger people are not necessarily in employment, A, and,
yes,
B, not necessarily the tax generators for the government, and they, yeah, are the largest population. So how do we, and are they interested? Because they're, yeah, not, it doesn't involve them, right?
I'll give you a very good development in the recent past. So
okay.
I sat down with the Commissioner for Micro and Small Businesses, mm-hmm, at the Revenue Authority. And when we are talking about the tax base expansion, and he tells me in this particular year, we are going hard on withholding tax. Mm-hmm. And we had a conversation about the provisions of the Income Tax Act around the 5% and 3%. And the fact that it is an advance and not a final tax. Mm-hmm. So I go in and I tell my editor on the Business Daily that, dude, we have a big story here. So these are the numbers the Revenue Authority is looking at, and many Kenyans will have a problem with this because a number have been assuming it's a final tax, mm-hmm. and it's not. Mm-hmm. And this is the guys in the gig economy. These are the guys who have a very unpredictable income.
Correct.
Because Njeri had an event, she called me as the moderator. She withheld the 5%, mm-hmm. and I took the 95%, and I was like, yes, mm-hmm. this is mine. Forgetting I have an obligation to carry net of expenses. Mm-hmm. So increasingly, ever since that discussion was had, ever since we did that story, my inbox has been inundated by guys who are predominantly in the gig space. What do we do? What is an eTeams invoice to begin with?
Yes, because they're imposing all of these obligations on independents as well.
So tax compliance and tax administration is becoming front and center on that gig space. Mm-hmm. And you'll be surprised. A lot of my inquiries nowadays are from guys who are of the younger demographic and playing in that space. So yes, there is increasing appetite from that bracket of the market as well.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean that's a good all round for all of us to be educated and to know.
Absolutely.
I want to know, where do you get your sources from?
My sources.
How do you get to the information before anyone else?
It's always about keeping your pulse and your ears on the ground. Mm-hmm. Case in point, I'm at a forum and there's an expression on a panel around, we think Kenya is a good market. This is a major bank in Nigeria. That tells you something.
If they're saying it,
yeah. mm-hmm. they must be having that conversation at board level. Mm-hmm. So you start nosing around from that point. And our job is really, to a good extent, nosing around. Or NCB and Nedbank. You have been hearing about something. Then someone whispers something to you and you start chasing it. Or you are in parliament and you're just following the usual parliamentary proceedings. But in between, a parliamentarian who sits in a very important committee makes what should be an off-the-cuff remark, but is extremely heavy, either on revenue raising or appropriations. When that session is done, you pull that guy aside. What exactly do you mean? How far is it? So sources are everywhere. Mm-hmm. Yes. And of course, we protect our sources.
Well, I think I'm impressed by the speed with which you move. And I think that's really good. Tell me also about where you see Kenya being placed vis-a-vis Africa, vis-a-vis the continent, and also with our relationship with the US and Europe. How do you think that's going to affect us going forward?
Massive. One is that for one reason or the other, Kenya appears to. So let's take a step back. We are in a very interesting space where there's a lot of geopolitical fragmentation. Mm. The notion that Europe and the US will always be on one side of the axis, if I could call it that, is increasingly being tested thanks to the Trump administration. And so we are at a point where we are asking ourselves, how should the Global South, Kenya included, posture in this kind of environment, mm-hmm. where we seem to be in a flux. Mm-hmm. So Kenya, I think, is well positioned in the sense that if you look at it from an East and Central Africa perspective, this is a pivotal economy by way of size, by way of development, and just providing a commercial hub, a commercial and financial services hub. So that's a plus. There are a couple of things which we need to get right. If you look at Nigeria, for instance, right now, Nigeria is having a very aggressive tax overhaul, mm-hmm. their regime. Mm-hmm. And they've asked themselves very pragmatic questions. One being, should businesses earning below a given threshold in turnover really be taxed directly? Mm-hmm. Because one, there's a cost to tax collection. Shouldn't you just focus on income tax or indirect taxes, mm-hmm. rather? So our peers are having very good conversations. And I think sometimes we get lost in our political noise, mm-hmm. and we don't move at the pace at which our competitors are moving. In terms of alignment, I think there's a lot of opportunity if we look at it from a Global South perspective. I had a trip to India last year, and I was blown away by their pace of digital payments. Mm-hmm. You walk in the streets, and every ordinary roadside kiosk has a QR code. Mm-hmm. Now, many times, mm-hmm. we celebrate M-Pesa, and rightly so. But we need to see what India is doing. Mm-hmm. India is at another level.
So just explain it to me. The QR code, you scan it and then...
You simply scan mm-hmm. and your payment is done.
Okay.
You don't have to go through layers of entering the number, then entering the account, then amount, then... You don't have that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's because the regulator, the Reserve Bank of India, took the initiative to provide an underlying infrastructure. So should that be a conversation we're having, or should we continue resting in our laurels that we have this mobile money platform?
Very, very important, because we'll be talking about M-Pesa in
We can't, right? So there are key learnings. Mm-hmm. There are key learnings to borrow from other jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I think Kenya is. Regionally, our peers are really stepping up. If you go to Addis, some fun things are happening in Addis mm-hmm. in terms of even just capital market liberalization, which tells you there's enormous opportunity there. Mm-hmm. There's huge opportunity. So that's where we are. That's where we are. I think we have some good human capital. There are a couple of kinks which we need to straighten out, especially from a policy and a politics environment.
But I think the interesting thing is, as aggressive as the tax policy is here, or you know how KRA has been bumping up and you know really sending you messages, sending you emails to be like, hey, your tax is due, etc. How does that play? You can do all the revenue collection that you want.
Yes.
How does that play with the political environment and also the corruption index, which we can't run away from?
Absolutely.
Which we are at the very top.
You know, you raise an important point, because I remember when we were caught in the June 24 protests.
Yeah.
One of the things which I really tried to amplify was, this should be as much an appropriations conversation as it is a revenue raising mm-hmm. Conversation. Because if you look at the architecture of our budget cycle, there's a reason why the appropriations bill, which is the bill which tells you this is how we'll spend money, mm-hmm. goes side by side with the finance bill, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. which is the revenue raising bill, mm-hmm. which tells you these are the measures we want to raise. A lot of our focus, even right now, is on the finance bill.
Mm-hmm. And not appropriations.
The appropriations bill. And I'm not just saying this is a common Mwananchi thing. Even tax practitioners, if you sit down with them and ask them about appropriations, you realize they really struggle.
Mm.
So there is a lot of enlightenment that needs to be done. For example, right now, we are expecting a supplementary budget.
Mm-hmm.
The way Treasury designs the supplementary budget documents is really complex for even professionals to follow through. It is we who are extremely passionate about that the public finance space who are able to track the digit. Mm-hmm. This is how it has changed. The allocation to healthcare has changed by this much, and for this reason. So we try to our level best to really break this down and bring it to that level. But until we have very frank conversations about our appropriations, we will be skewed so much on the revenue side. But once you raise that revenue, how is that money being spent?
Exactly. Also, is there work to be done on checking whether it has been spent where it has been said to be spent?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's a good point, because another website where I always tell Kenyans, so anytime I get to an office, my office, a number of websites must be open.
Okay.
National Treasury.
Okay.
Central Bank of Kenya.
Okay.
The Auditor General.
Okay.
And the Controller of Budget. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, to your last question, the Controller of Budget and the Auditor General are the ones who tell you, fine, this is what was written down. That money wasn't spent there.
Yeah.
And they start flagging, you see. And I really enjoy, one of my best works in journalism was when I did a special report on the Kenya's first Eurobond, the mm-hmm. one floated in 2014, where we raised $2 billion. And the special report done by the Auditor General laid it bare. The money was raised. It cannot be traced to specific projects, unfortunately. And that special report really gathered dust in the National Assembly for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
It was tabled.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got a hold of it, I was like, this is a gold mine. Yeah. So, and when the report went out, I mean, the feedback was massive. But that's the point. The Auditor General's office does fantastic work.
Mm-hmm.
The Controller of Budget does amazing work around the checks and balances on appropriations. Brilliant.
But do you get political heat for that? Do you get political heat from criticizing or even exposing?
Absolutely,
how
yes.
How do you deal with that?
Absolutely, yes. Many times you will do a piece or you'll do a post on X, and one institution or the other is not happy with what you're doing. We feel you're not objective. And my question is always one. Show me where the mistake is, and I've got no reservations going public and saying, I got this wrong. This is what the right position is. Because finally, we don't just critique for the sake of critiquing. Mm. We actually critique because we love this country.
But the interesting thing is, I mean, we all love this country, but and a lot of feedback. Kenyans on Twitter or Kenyans, you know.
Instant feedback.
Instant feedback you'll get. And people are very vocal. But yes, we're not good on the repercussions of that. Yeah. Because have any heads rolled?
Unfortunately not. Parliament has a lot of work to do. Because Parliament is finally the institution which does appropriations, for example. Parliament is the one which does oversight. And many times you'll ask a Kenyan, do you know who your member of parliament is?
I mean, if you ask me, I don't know.
Yes. Or do you know who your MCA is?
No.
2 years ago, I did a breakdown on Nairobi County's finance bill.
I just want to check. Does anyone else know? Because I'll be embarrassed if it's just me. No. Okay.
That's where it starts. Mm-hmm. Your member of parliament represents you on those critical decisions. And once you are clear about that, do you know the various persons in the critical committees, appropriations, finance and planning? Because those are the guys we hold to account.
We're not.
Yeah.
We're not holding them to account.
And it starts with information.
Yeah.
So we need to be equipped on the knowledge, like appropriations. Yesterday, we saw the final budget policy statement for 2026. So we already have a sense of the budget size for FY26-27, 4.7 trillion shillings. If you look at the revenue target, 3.53 trillion shillings. Mm-hmm. There's a huge deficit there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are we asking ourselves, how are we raising this money? How much is being borrowed domestically? And many other questions.
What did you see in it that you thought was positive?
The way the budget cycle is sequenced is that we first of all see the draft budget policy statement from National Treasury. Then we see the final.
Okay.
The difference between the two is, in between this public participation. So we submitted our comments.
Oh, you submitted your comments?
I did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I can see there was a clear attempt to ensure that even if we are revising upward the revenue target, let's not increase ordinary revenue. Now, why is that important? Because ordinary revenue is taxation, payee, VAT, excise, customs, and all the rest. So that tells you we shouldn't expect a lot of drama around the taxation side. But here's the catch. What they have increased is what you call appropriation in aid, alternative sources of revenue. It comes in terms of levies.
Okay.
Yes. So that is where, already now, as a Kenyan, you should know, when those documents come out, my laser focus should be on the levies.
And what kind of levies are we talking about?
So we don't know yet.
Okay.
So we have now to wait to see the finance bill, to see what are the proposals around that.
I mean, there's a sense in which, and I'm speaking as a Kenyan, that you feel as if they'll get you either way. do you understand what I mean? Whether it's on the tax, on the levies, on the amount of the deduction, we're using M-Pesa, but people rarely look at how much those deductions are.
The transaction costs are steep.
Transaction costs are very steep.
Yes.
There's a sense in which, what are we getting as Kenyans ourselves? And I always ask that question. Do you feel as if yourself and other Kenyans are getting something for what they're paying out for every day?
So what you're raising is the conversation we've been having around tax morale. The reason why Kenya's tax morale is low is because Kenyans don't have a feeling of value for money for all the deductions they are getting. So for instance, now we have had affordable housing levy, we have the social health levy.
Correct.
The ordinary household in January made a lot of noise around the grade 10 transition and the fact that education has become so expensive, yet it's a basic. It's so expensive. And that is where the question of appropriations come in. When Treasury tables the appropriation bill, which is a spending plan before Parliament, where are these allocations going? And are they yielding positive outcome for the ordinary Kenyan? And we must take Parliament to task over this matter.
Yeah.
And Parliament, I've come to learn, is a labor of love. We have gone through, I'm very active when it comes to public participation. You submit a comment, it is rejected this time. You submit it in the next budget cycle, it is rejected. By the third budget cycle, Treasury is very clear, that policy proposal has misfired. Mm-hmm. It's not working. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You see your proposal being adopted 3 budget cycles down the line. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it is, you will be discouraged. Mm-hmm. 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 But we should never cede just because we're being discouraged. Mm-hmm. Finance Act 23 had a ridiculous amendment on excise tax, Section 36, that excise collections from alcoholic beverage manufacturers will be done every 24 hours. When we went before the House, we even asked, "Is accounting is not even built to work this way. You're in perpetual reconciliation." Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And eventually it dawned on them that the collections don't even match what you expected. So, yeah, it's a labor of love.
Gosh, but it's a labor of love for you as well to be constantly explaining things that are very difficult to understand.
And, yes.
Okay, how does Julian relax? What do you do for relaxation?
I'm an avid reader.
Okay.
I'm an avid reader. And
what's the last book you read?
The last reading? Book. So the last book I read, I'm trying to remember this title. I've just finished reading an autobiography. What's this guy's name? It's just disappearing from my mind.
We'll come back.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
But I'm an avid reader. Mm-hmm. So that's how I wind down my time, playing Scrabble and chess.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's something I really enjoy.
Online or?
Oh, no. The actual. The physical board itself and just enjoying the game.
Yeah.
So that's what I do.
What special skill have you discovered about yourself outside of journalism that you think, I can tell you what it is, but I want you to tell me.
I'm not sure it would fit outside of journalism because one of the things which I just came to realize is when it comes to distilling things, you can give me what? You can throw at me a 300-page document, but distilling it into a manner that everyone will kind of feel now, I connect the dots as to how this relates to me, mm-hmm. seems to be a skill that I have.
But I saw you moderating at the Africa CEO Forum.
Yes.
But I thought moderation also, because I think you were balancing a lot of different characters and very, well, high profile characters.
Yes.
And it's not a very easy role when everyone thinks that they're the king of the.
And especially when they're multilingual. Correct. So you've got a French speaker, you've got a Portuguese speaker, and you must hear them in their language first, and it's being translated to English, and you must keep your audience engaged. Yeah. It's quite an art, actually.
I thought you actually did a very
good job. It's quite an art, and it's something which every time I look back, I mean, I'm credit to my high school.
Yeah, which high school? Are you going to shout them out here? Everyone always shouts out their high school in these podcasts.
Yes,
I was in Alliance.
I was in Alliance High School.
Of course. Yes. Of course, it's the Alliance.
It really gave me a good launch pad in terms of public speaking because the opportunities were really granted for you to showcase what you can do and to finesse that skill. Mm. So I think it really worked for me on that
front. Well, it definitely is working, Julian. In terms of the future, in 5 years' time, what do you want to be doing?
Oh, tough question, Jerry. Tough question. I feel that public policy dissemination still has a long way to go. Mm-hmm. And whether I continue doing it in mainstream or predominantly alternative media, or purely going behind the scenes, is something which is definitely on my radar.
Yeah.
It's what I enjoy doing. People ask me, dude, don't you get tired of doing these breakdowns? I genuinely just enjoy doing them.
I think you can see that you enjoy doing them. I think you
I just enjoy
see
doing
that,
them.
That you understand the subject matter, and I think that's great. But there's an international stage that you could be taking up opportunities. I'm not trying to.
Amen to those prayers. Yeah. I am very keen. I'm certainly very keen on trying to get my foothold there. Doing the CEO Forum, the Africa Financial Industry Summit, doing engagements in Washington D.C. last year, moderating at the UN General Assembly.
Yeah, I mean that's amazing. That's,
which is it just shows you that there's a much larger space
there is, and the sky is the limit.
There are bigger conversations to be had, and you can actually have influence beyond your typical sphere. Yes. So yes, gradually.
What would a younger Julian tell you today?
Oh, the first thing they would tell me is that you've really detoured.
detoured, yeah.
You know, when you grow up, and the way we guys grew up, and everybody thinks they should be in the medical field or engineering, no one ever thinks of being a journalist.
Yes.
At least not that I have met.
I really liked the idea of being a journalist.
Oh, really?
Yes, and that's why I probably do this as well.
Yes.
Because I like the idea of asking questions.
So it's, you really do it, Todd. But mm-hmm. also, just to sit back and look at, when I started doing breakdowns on X, for instance, yeah. properly around 2017, 18, 8 years down the line, the public discourse has really shifted.
Mm.
And there are many people who have played a role here. This is not to say that I should take the credit, not at all. I've just been a small piece of that pie. And anytime I see Kenyans debating, like right now, the government's divestiture from Safaricom,
mm-hmm.
the heated conversation about valuation is such a breath of fresh air.
Mm.
We can all argue that you have interests, you're politically skewed, but that we're debating valuation of the country's biggest company
mm.
is a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
This country has come from a point where the budget cycle used to be a very opaque process. We would just see the Treasury Cabinet Secretary holding that briefcase. To see every Kenyan, very keen, coming through, clause by clause, on the finance bill, man.
I mean, that is a
I feel, you know, when the late president, Mwai Kibaki, passed on, I was assigned that this guy was an economist. Do for us a piece on Kibaki, the economist. And so I thought the best way to do it, Kibaki was finance minister in this country from 1969 to 1981. And if you ask me, the most consequential finance minister we ever had. So I read all his budget speeches from 1969 to 81. Then I was like, if I've read all this, why not read Kenya's budget speeches from 1963? So I went back, 63, 64, all the way to the current mm. one. And you can see the evolution of public finance. The finance minister would tell parliamentarians in the 60s and 70s that a bill will take effect tonight. Forget even about the public. It will take effect tonight. There's no conversation about it.
Mm.
Right now, before you introduce that bill, it goes through the motions. It goes through public participation. I mean, we've made some good journey.
Do you think the public are participating enough?
Not enough, but in a very compelling way compared to where we were even a decade ago.
Okay.
Even just a decade ago, yeah. I'll give you an example. We interviewed the Treasury Cabinet Secretary around the National Infrastructure Fund. And I remember asking, we have seen the draft Sovereign Wealth Fund bill. Why don't we have a National Infrastructure Fund bill? And he told me that we are looking at modalities of setting it up without having going through a bill process. Guess what? That bill was now tabled in the House yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Kenya of 20 years ago, it would not even be a conversation. We would not even have a bill.
Mm-hmm.
But because the public has raised that question, Treasury goes back to the drawing board and says, no, if we go this route, the angst we shall face from Kenyans is massive. Let's walk back.
Let's walk back.
Let's get a bill. And that by itself is a huge step.
Yeah, let's see. Let's see.
Absolutely.
We have a long way to go anyway.
Yes, but we have made good strides.
Okay.
Yeah.
What advice would you give? So now we're talking to young professionals, young people who want to get into journalism, perhaps someone who is interested in disseminating policy the same way as you are, someone who's looking at what can I do to participate. What advice would you give to a young person today?
Looking at my life and what I would tell them is, one, you don't have to be what you studied. And I think my life is a living testament of that.
Mm-hmm.
You can leverage that skill in a platform which, one, has impact, and two, gives you fulfillment. And fulfillment is in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
You might not make all the money that you want, but if you see the society moving 1 inch today, 2 inches tomorrow, in part because of your work, you should be extremely proud.
Yeah. I mean, that is true, Julian. You should be very proud.
Yeah. So proud. Thank you very much.
Is there a motto that you live by?
I wouldn't say there is a motto I live by, but I always remember what one of my mentors told me when I was starting work and I was there complaining about my compensation. And he told me money fits in the lifestyle you choose.
Mm.
Even if I gave you 10 million, if you choose a lifestyle which cannot accommodate it, you will blow that budget. So money fits in the lifestyle that you choose.
That's a very good one. That's a very good one. Can you share a professional experience that has shaped you aside from the COVID one?
The COVID one, I already mentioned it, is very, very instrumental for me. The second one that I would share, a professional experience.
I guess what the difference is something that shaped your way of thinking, maybe about the world or about Kenya, about how you want to impact the country.
I think, let me just walk back to something which I mentioned earlier, is that I began undergrad in September of 2009. And I studied economics at the time when the world was at the trough of the 08-09 financial meltdown.
Credit crunch.
Yes. Lehman Brothers has collapsed and it has taken down a lot. And that time was characterized by a lot of skepticism around orthodox economics. Mm-hmm. So we used to go to class and ask, do these models we even learn make sense?
Like the Keynesian model or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I have learned the beauty of being a perpetual skeptic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. That this thing is predominantly done this way, but it doesn't stop you from asking, but is that the optimal way of doing it? Because if there's anything that studying econ at that time taught me is, ask why. Just perpetually ask why. Mm. So this thing is designed this way. This is how the model is meant to work. Why? Can it work differently? Can it deliver more optimal outcomes? And that is in part what keeps me in this public finance and public policy space. Hmm. Yeah. Are we really extracting the highest dividends we can for our people? That's it.
Those are very good points.
Yeah.
From the transactions that have, because there's been a lot of market activity in the last few months.
Yes.
There's the Nedbank, there's Zenith, there's
Kenya Asahi, Pipeline.
There's Kenya Pipeline, there's EABL. All of those transactions are really revolutionary for the country, or potentially revolutionary for the country. Which ones would you say you're most excited about from that list?
One is, I'm excited about Kenya Pipeline. Mm-hmm. Kenya Pipeline is a legacy asset in this country. We should never forget that. And the fact that the government is now divesting and ceding control to the public is something which is welcome. We want to own a piece of that pie, and every Kenyan should come through that investment memorandum. Mm-hmm. Again, we can debate the valuation, but that debate by itself is a good starting point. So I think Kenya Pipeline, after Safaricom, will be one of the signature transactions in this country from a government divestiture standpoint.
So should we invest?
You know, I hosted the transaction advisor, and I expressed my misgivings around the valuation of the IPO. Mm-hmm. So I guess that answers the question.
I guess he answered it, yeah.
But just to mention again, Nedbank NCBA is a very consequential transaction in multiple ways. I mean, that's a whole podcast by itself.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that Kenyans will be able to effectively own stock at the JSC tells you many things. One, it tells you about where this market has reached in terms of design of transactions.
Yes.
It's not a simple thing. Mm-hmm. Two, the sort of market you're being given access to is a very heavily liquid market vis-a-vis ours here. And it just tells you the sort of stratosphere you're starting to play at. Two, if you look at it from a multiple standpoint, I remember sitting down with my good friend John Gashora and telling him, dude, you must have really extracted this premium. And we said many things on and off camera, so I shall leave it at that.
Yes, and but also I'm not at liberty to comment.
Of course you're not. So that deal is a landmark deal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I love the idea of looking for multiple structures that can work for the current economy that we're working in, the current people that are looking for, what kind of sophistication do they have? And I think that's a good thing for all of us.
Absolutely.
Okay. Julian, you've been an amazing guest.
Thank you very much.
I want to do a quick fire round.
I'm ready.
Okay. Early morning or late? Late evening, night.
Can I answer it in two parts?
Yes.
When I didn't have kids, early morning. Now that I have kids.
How many kids do you have?
Four.
Wow, Julian. I did not expect you to say four. What are the ages?
7.5, 4.5, and twins who are a year and 9 months.
I love that.
Yep.
Gosh. Yeah.
So now I'm a night owl.
Wow.
Yes, because before you do all the homework and then you play with the twins, that's why my threads drop at 1 a.m., 2 a.m.
Oh, that's when you start I understand that. And you know, you are the future of the Kenyan economy is in your hands with them.
Sure.
Have you remembered the author of the book that you're reading?
No, it's so not. Mind, yes. Okay,
we'll put it in the trailer. A podcast or publication that you rarely miss?
The FT.
Okay.
Financial Times TV has got very nice documentaries. I'm a regular there.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. What's the most misunderstood economic term that people think that they know, but they really don't understand what it means?
Not economic, but in public finance, qualified versus non-qualified accounts.
What does it mean?
So I remember one governor saying, we finally got a qualified assessment from the Auditor General and they're there celebrating. And you're like, dude, maybe you should go back and check what exactly what that means because it is raising a couple of questions around your books. But yes, that is something which many guys get wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you had an extra hour in the day, what would you do with it?
Oh, I would do an extra lap in jogging.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Do you jog every day?
I try every day.
What time?
Mostly every alternate.
Okay.
So I get home, do homework, disappear and jog, then come back.
Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Cool. How far?
Just about 3 km.
I mean, that's standard. Decent.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. If you could meet any person or at any time of the century, whoever, who would it be?
Oh, that's a tough one. Oh my God, that's a tough one, Jerry.
Or have you met everyone? Have you met all your idols?
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
I haven't. But if I could meet Steve Biko, of the anti-apartheid struggle.
Yeah.
That would be nice one of my one. Favorite books is Steve Biko's I Write What I Like. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yes.
That's a good one. Okay. And I guess that would be the conversation that you'd have. Okay. Julian, you've been a brilliant guest.
Asante sana.
Thank you so much for making time.
Thoroughly enjoyed this.
Keep doing what you're doing because honestly, it's a public service. As much as it's a TV show and et cetera, it's actually a public service and we really appreciate you.
Thank you for hosting me. It's been a delight. Looking forward to many more episodes.
Yes. Take care of yourself, Julian.
Asante.
Take care, everyone. See you next month.